But every possible nerd.
Yeah.
It was standing there with a weird hat, their cards, doing things, sitting there seriously, not a female in sight.
No.
No. I think I told the story at the panel one, and Sophia goes, "That's what my husband does."
Yeah.
I go, with who? Welcome to. Oh, no. Welcome. Tell me when the music ends. Is he here?
Now.
There he is.
There.
Oh, with,
oh, you
oh my
him.
Gosh.
Yeah. Hi.
Get close. Do you go anywhere without the dog? Howie Mandel really? Does stuff. I'm Howie Mandel.
I'm Jacqueline Schultz.
And Joe Mangiella.
Mangiella. Manga.
Gala.
Manga.
Manga.
Nella.
Manganella. What did I say?
Oh, that's easy.
You said Mangia.
No.
With
how
a
do
soft
you pronounce
G.
it? No, that's not where I have time. Is it Joe or Ja? Ja?
Joie.
Joie.
French.
Schwa.
I said your name wrong.
Or you can say Manganiello or Manganello.
Manganello.
Yeah.
So you corrected me with three different ways of saying
two.
It.
Two.
Oh, your mic.
You just have to hit the G. Okay, I'm over here.
Oh, right, Manganello.
Perfect, yeah. And I have a headphones too. Great.
Yeah, so you can hear us. Do you go anywhere without your puppy?
She just stares at the door when I'm gone. It's really sad. And so I just take her everywhere. I take her to Ireland. I just shot a movie in New Jersey. I took her for a month and a half to Jersey.
What did you shoot in Jersey?
This kind of dark comedy drama with Sam Jackson and Uma Thurman about this like hitman basically for these drug dealers who gets wrapped up in this money laundering scheme where they're going to make these like shitty paintings. That you know, people can't tell the value of modern art. It's like it's completely objective. So my boss, Sam Jackson, says, "Why don't you go paint something? Go paint a couple wavy lines, some circles," and I go and do it, and somebody buys it for like $150,000, and they want more. And so Uma Thurman is this kind of like way past her moment art gallery owner, and she sees something in me and kind of starts pushing me, and I start creating art from the killer side.
Wow.
And so the art world becomes obsessed, but I have to hide my identity, which then like blows it up even further. And we start planning my last hit so that I can kind of buy my freedom and get out. And that's the movie.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Well, that's just a spoiler.
Did you ruin the end? Yeah.
You don't know what happened.
I said, what did you do? And you gave me the whole movie.
Tune in
did you produce this?
No, I didn't produce it. No.
I know you and your brother have a production company, right?
Yeah. And I am in the habit of producing independents, but I didn't. So on this one, it was nice. I got to just go to work and then go home, and everybody else had to clean up.
Do you find producing independents as a habit? It's like smoking? I can't stop. I can't.
No, I can stop. God, it's brutal.
Like, you have a movie coming out now, right? July?
I have a TV series for AMC coming out.
Called?
Called Moonhaven.
Moonhaven.
Yeah.
And is that yours? Is that the one you did?
I didn't produce that. AMC did. Once again, nice gig. Get to go into work late, leave early.
Would you rather do that? Just produce your own stuff or go to work?
If there are much smarter people than me in the room, then I'm very happy to show up and be a part of their vision.
Thank you so much.
If that's not if that's not the case, then you know it's really hard. You know, with independence, you need a really good team, and you need people that care. You need people that want to do it, who got into this business not for money, not for anything else, but they wanted to tell a good story. You need those people around you, and if you don't have them, it's a nightmare.
That's why you got into this business?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I want to tell good stories. I'm Generation X. We don't care about money. We just care about being cool.
So a little bit of your background. You're from Pittsburgh,
uh-huh.
And you've made that known. Really, you're like,
yeah.
You are Mr. Pittsburgh.
Sure.
You are the welcome wagon to Pittsburgh.
I love Pittsburgh.
And you're a Steelers fan.
Yep.
And you've written a couple of books. Didn't you write a book or do a
I wrote a book.
A couple, right?
I wrote one book so far. The foreword was written by Arnold Schwarzenegger, as a matter of
fact. Who's a hero of yours?
Well, growing up, I think anybody who ever, you know.
Fuck their maid.
When it, come on.
No. But I'm just saying, that's what he's known for.
No, it's not.
No, I know.
That is not what he's known for.
No, he was also.
He's fucked a lot more people.
Dad.
No, I'm sorry.
He inspired a generation like me to pick up weights and really get into bodybuilding and things like that. And
that why you got into bodybuilding? You're in amazing shape.
Well, no, I mean, I was an athlete. I was a football player. So at age 13, they throw you in the gym and they start torturing you.
So that's what I was going to ask. I talked to I work with your wife. For people that
spoiler,
don't, I work with Sofia Vergara, and she kind of gives me. I'm fascinated by you, so I ask a lot of questions. So I would imagine, because that seems like a 180 degree turn. Growing up in Pennsylvania, in Steel Town, playing football. Did you other sports too?
Yeah, I was going to go to college to play basketball and go into federal law enforcement. That was actually what I was going to do right up until the last moment when I got a scholarship to the Carnegie Mellon School of Drama, which is
180. It wasn't a football scholarship to the Carnegie Mellon.
No, I told them I didn't. I told the coaches I didn't want to play. I said I don't want to play. I want to go for acting. I mean, I don't have time to play. There was one person from the drama department who played sports. He played basketball, and the drama department threw him out after one semester.
Because he was jockish?
Because he had no time.
Still playing sports while he was
in school. You have to, you know, you have so much work there. You know, they really work you. We'd get there at 8:20 in the morning for warm-ups, and if you didn't show up, they would dock you a grade. They wouldn't give anyone A's the first 2 years. The highest grade you could get was a B. And if you got two C's, you were out. So if you didn't show up to your yoga warm up at 8:20, which is about discipline, then that's one C. And then if you get another C, you're out. So
it was harder than being on a football team.
It was,
that sounds discouraging.
It's really hardcore. Yeah. I mean, if you would imagine like the most hardcore training program for sports, including like the combine before all the agents, managers, casting agents, the actors have those. So it's kind of similar.
I feel like those are the two scariest or career paths to go on, and musician, because it's either like you make it or you don't. Yeah.
But
right?
Your parents are your parents in the business? No.
No.
So I'm thinking Pittsburgh, that's all American. Their kid is, going possibly on a football scholarship and then makes this turn, and you tell them you're like, for all intents and purposes, Billy Elliot.
In a way, yeah, that's similar. Oh, yeah, all the coaches made it a point to grab me in the hallway and tell me what an idiot I was. And
they
what a mistake I was making with my life. Yeah.
What inspired you to act? Like that seems like such a.
I was always an artist inside. I was always an artistic kid. I wrote, I painted, I drew from the time I was like little, and even like G.I. Joe and Star Wars, like. I would wake up and continue the story and create these scenarios in my mind. And anybody who would sit there and listen to me, I would tell you the stories. And then that kind of led into like, you know, I found like, like role-playing games. And I started running games for my friends, which is basically being a showrunner. I would write the story and then my friends would show up with their characters and then they would play the characters in my show. And I would kind of run the show for them.
Which you still do. You're a big Dungeons & Dragons.
I got back into it. Well, I work for D&D. So I started working for them about 7 years ago as a consultant.
What do you mean working for them?
Well, I'm not like a fanboy. I got hired because I knew so much about their product. I knew more about their product than most of the people who work there. So they started hiring me to help consult.
But how do they know you know that much about Dungeons & Dragons?
Well, if you spend 10 minutes with me and you know what D&D is, you'll figure it out.
Okay, so Sophia has told me this. She says, I have a lot of friends. I don't gamble. I don't play games. I'm not good in sports. Yeah. I'm really not good at anything.
What do you do? Other than make tons of money and host awesome shows.
I'm doing this for free. Yeah. But the thing about it is, you know, I would live part-time in Santa Monica. Mm-hmm. And we would walk by the comic bookstore I think I mentioned this to Sophia. I said, I walk by and I look in the window like on Friday night and there was like every, I'm trying to be politically correct, but every possible nerd.
Yeah.
Standing there with a weird hat, their cards, doing things, sitting there seriously, not a female in sight.
No.
No. And they're all gathered around the table, and this seemed to be their life, and I was always fascinated by them. And I think I told the story at the panel one, and Sophia goes, that's what my husband does.
Yeah.
I go, with who? And you have like a game of Hollywood types.
Yeah, it's I guess it's the equivalent of Johnny Carson's poker game.
It isn't. Oh, it's not? It's Dungeons and Dragons. It's,
right.
It's
so we all used to play poker. We were all guys who used to get together socially and hang out and smoke cigars and do our thing.
Right.
And now, but as kids, we all grew up playing this game. And then we all took 25, 30-year hiatuses. I didn't touch it for 25 years probably. And then... you know, I was trying to get the rights to some books the Dungeons and Dragons owned. When I was, I had a couple of successful films at Warner Brothers. I said, "What do you want to do next?" I said, "I want to do these books." They said, "Do we own them?" I said, "Yes, you do. You have them."
They didn't even know.
No, had no idea. What are they? All right, so I had to like educate them. And then I, a friend of mine from Carnegie Mellon, a screenwriter named John Castle, he and I got together, and you know, I basically helped him. We kind of co-wrote, I guess, if you call it, a spec script to show them what was possible with this property. And, you know, I kept chasing those books. And through chasing those books, I wound up getting back, because there were executives that were playing, and then they were like, "Come play on Friday night, we're playing." I'm like, okay, yeah, I haven't played in years. So I went and played, and then I started calling other friends. And then once people kind of caught wind of it, I would have meetings with executives who knew that I had this game.
Right.
And I would go to Sony to talk about some project, and the guy would like close the door, look down the hallway, and be like, "I used to play when I was a kid." You know, like they're coming out to me. You know, and I'm like, okay. And
can I get into your game?
Well,
I don't know that much about the game.
Isn't that what Stranger Things is about now?
Well, like, kind of. I mean, the kids, yeah, and like the first scene of Stranger Things, the kids are playing D&D.
Yeah.
But they're playing this kind of like crazy, like, you know, crazy version of it. But, you know, my version, for example, like the guys who created Game of Thrones, they play in my Friday night game.
Really?
Yeah, so they don't have to run the show. They don't have to come up with the storylines. They just have to have their character show up, and they're in my show. And they get to like kick back and
have fun.
You
play for money?
No, you roll dice and it's collaborative. So like, for example, Vince Vaughn is in my game, and you know, Vince's father, I introduce Vince's father, like his character's father, into the game. And I'd write these huge monologues, and Vince and I just start like improvising, and he's speaking to his father, and I'm his father on his deathbed, and his father needs to give him this thing and this piece of information that they're going to carry with them, and then there's this huge war going on, and they kind of like figure out their place within this war and band together.
How many people are sitting there in a game?
My game is way bigger than, ideally you want 4 to 6. Mine is 11, and then I'm the 12th. I'm running the game, but it's like everybody wanted to play. Tom Morello from Rage Against the Machine was like, he's like, "I got to get in." I'm like, "Great." And then he's like, "Hey, this guy in my kid's carpool wants to play." I go, "Well, who's the guy?" And he said, "Dan, he wrote Game of Thrones." I said, "Yeah, all right, he can play." And then Dan came over. Dave threatened to divorce him as a creative partner if he didn't get Dave into my game. So then Dave joined the big show. The big 7 foot yeah. four, you know, Big Show, Paul White. He loves Dungeons and Dragons. When he was a kid, he plays. He would fly in from Florida, charter a jet, and come to the games on Friday. And
When you're playing the game, you read these monologues and you.
Yeah, I write them, and you know, so it's
you wear a hat.
You write. I do voices. I do, you know, everything that you would expect. I'm the whole world except for them, and then they get to do whatever they want, which is like chaotic at times.
Have you ever thought about just recording the live game?
Yeah, we thought about it. You know, I think a lot of us. Well, see, what happened was I ran into Jon Favreau at a Bob Iger party.
Okay.
And you know, Vince and John have been friends forever, and I was like, "John, when are you coming over to play?" And of course, he turned to Sophia and said, "You still have sex with him?" You know, meaning like,
right,
you know, he plays a stupid nerdy game, yeah. You know, and I went, "Come on, John." I go, come over. And he goes, "No, you know, I'm doing The Mandalorian right now. And The Mandalorian for me is dungeon mastering as a kid. I write the show the way that I did as a dungeon master. So that's the same thing for me." So anyway, the point is I wound up getting access to those books that I wanted. And I'm working on the pilot.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be like a nerdy, funny story, but it's kind of an inspirational story.
It's not nerdy, though. It's kind of like the same thing as all the comic books and superheroes yes. that now turned into huge movies and these yeah. huge franchises.
He's in a lot of them.
Yeah.
Well, so. And same thing is, you know, I was a part of like 6 of them that all got canceled. But while that was happening, you know, I'm a big researcher as an actor. Like, I just love
six
films.
What do you
six
mean they got
superhero
canceled?
Films that all were canceled one
what do you
after
mean?
Another.
You were in Spider-Man.
Well, I was cast as the main villain in Ben Affleck's Batman. That movie was canceled.
Because Ben left.
Well, there was a lot of drama going. Well, there was no prep. They called me. I got the job in July. I went back and forth that summer to London to make the suit. We went to Monaco. We shot my scene that would be at the end of Justice League. I trained Qigong. I was learning ninjutsu. I was learning katana. I was studying with Navy SEALs. We were out on the range shooting all the rifles that I was going to use.
This is followed by the comment you made. There was no prep.
Well, I was prepping. Oh. And then in January, they called me and said, he hasn't, you know, there's nothing ready.
Shit.
And so,
is that going to happen?
No, this was 5 years ago, 5.5 years ago. And we were supposed to go in May. So I got a call in January that said, it's over. And, you know, I just kind of laid in bed and stared at the ceiling for 2 weeks.
That's got to be depressing.
It was awful. It was awful.
And, you were also going to be Superman.
Yeah.
Is that a bad thing? Am I bringing up something?
I mean, it's kind of awful. Yeah, these are all the kind of like disappointments that you go through in Hollywood. You know? But
go ahead. There's four more that you haven't brought up yet, Dan.
I won't bring up any more. I don't want to. Am I pissing you off?
No. I mean, it's just, you know, I've kind of talked about it a little bit. But I know that there are bloggers out there that are going to hear this and it's just going to go wild. So, you know, it was kind of, it was really disappointing in the studio. You know, I talked to the guys at the studio who were, you know, they were real fans of mine. And they didn't want me, you know, they didn't want to see it go down that way. And I had been writing and pitching them all this character work that I was doing. I think the character's this. I think he would have gone from Navy SEALs to DEVGRU to CIA's ground branch. I think he would have been like super black op, like crazy, you know, clandestine stuff overseas. Then, you know, this is how I think the katana works in, and this is how I think and they said, this is amazing. Why don't we do this as an origin story for your character, standalone? You know, could you write a treatment? I said, yeah, okay. And so I went away.
Did they pay you?
No, I mean, it was a bit like Animal Farm, like, sorry, it went down this way, go build a windmill. You know, so there's a bit of that, but I was like, okay, what else do I have to do? Like, this is the next right thing. I'm going to go do this. So I had all the work anyway. So I turned it into this treatment. I turned it into the studio. They loved it. We started going out to Oscar-nominated writers to see if anybody wanted to partner up with me. I worked on it for 6 months. There's an incredible, incredible director named Gareth Evans who did these Indonesian action movies called The Raid and The Raid 2, Raid Redemption. They're incredible. He has a series called Gangs of London. Incredible visionary director. And he was interested in doing it. We had a 2-hour-long Skype call, and he was into it. And Justice League came out, underperformed. Everybody at the studio got fired. Oh, and all the people who were championing me were gone. And that was it.
Can I ask you a happy question?
Please.
Please ask me that. I wasn't looking for sad. I feel terrible. No,
but this is the journey. This is being an actor. This is like, you know, like she was saying, it's like, you know, there's hard professions. You know, I want to run away and join the circus.
I want to come watch Dungeons & Dragons. I don't know
how to play. You have to make a character and play. You can't watch.
You have to go.
You got to play.
Dad, you got to go play.
Explain to me what I have to do.
You make a character.
Based on what? Like what?
Whatever you want to be.
What is it like?
But, do you want to be Conan? Do you want to be Merlin? Do you want to be Gandalf? Do you want to be a hobbit?
Saying. Do you have to be something that already exists?
But there's a ton of them. And pretty much if you came up with something out of your head, I could figure it out for you.
The old Jew.
We could do that.
Yeah.
But what does the old Jew do when he's in combat, when he fights?
He says, where is there a place to eat?
He removes his foreskin and shoots it at people.
Could do
I don't
that.
Think, no. Oh, really?
we can mold a spell into that. We can
it's
work
like,
a spell.
It's like a.
Well, that's it.
We can make
that's like a ninja it. Star, but
you
your
have
foreskin.
Been circumcised.
Yeah. There's and you just chop people in half and it comes back on. Yeah.
We could work this out.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
But is everybody, and then do you have to wear a, the people that are sitting around this table, are they wearing costumes?
Hell no, man. Come on. We don't do that stuff.
That's stupid.
Yeah.
That's stupid.
I mean, people do it. And I don't want to, punch down on like Renaissance fairs and things like
yeah,
that.
Yeah. I think you're thinking of something different, Dad. You're thinking,
of LARPing, which is out in the backyard in my monk robes, swinging a foam sword at somebody.
Do you do that?
No.
I don't know what that is.
No. Listen, this is like, you know.
Serious.
Well, it's cool. You know, it's fun, and it's like addictive, and it's
the
a great time.
The fact that you do it and Vince Vaughn doesn't, mm-hmm. you're making what would be considered, it's like John said to you, you know, you're still having sex with him, because, but overall, it's thought to be incredibly nerdy, right?
Well, which is funny because, you know, there is a movement a few years ago where, you know, I guess it was part of the feminist movement saying that there were all these gatekeepers in the 1980s who were keeping women from playing Dungeons and Dragons, and it was like, I would have stuck my arm in the belt sander in wood shop to get a girl to listen to me talk about Dungeons and Dragons for really? 30 seconds. Like, please, you know, it just wouldn't happen. Girls weren't interested in that time. Really? There's tons of girls to play now.
You know what I'd love to do? I'd love to watch you just describe it to your wife.
Oh yeah. That's
have you ever got her into a game of it?
Never. I get like 15. She'll go, did you win? And I'll go, you know, like she'll ask somebody, did you win? And they'll go, well, we didn't die. And then she'll ask me what happened, and I'll start explaining it, and she'll go, ah, and just shake her head.
Really?
And if I keep talking, she'll go, ah, do you want me to, like, go upstairs and get my earring tray and start telling you about my earrings for 30 minutes? And I go, all right, fine, forget it.
Really? But do you win? There's no end game. You don't end.
Yo, you can. Yeah, so the game that I was running pre-pandemic that we ran into the pandemic that we hit time out on, there's this big god at the end that's trying to take over the world, and there's these cults and minions that worship them.
You know that's happening.
Well, it's kind of topical. Some of it's ripped from the headlines. And they're getting closer and closer to this big final encounter against this god where some are going to live, some are going to die. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know how the story's going to end. The world could be enslaved, or they could win and be heroes.
Wow. It sounds like CNN. That's what it sounds like to me.
Who is Don Lemon in all of this?
I don't know. It's your game. You're actually really funny. Do you still play sports?
I used to. You know, well, so I when I moved to LA, I played pickup basketball on the weekends and lifted weights. And then I was a boxer for a while. I trained as a boxer. And
did you compete?
My trainer wanted me to start fighting in competitions. And I was like, I might need my face somewhere down the line. And I don't think, and I kind of, you know, I watch Mike Tyson videos all day long.
I was at was at that fight where he bit off the ear. I was right there. It was the scariest. It was really scary.
Must have been weird.
I don't know. There aren't words to describe how it was, but I was pretty close to the ring, and I saw him bite it, and I saw him spit it onto the mat. And I remember just looking and go, I don't think I saw what it was, but I wasn't registering what it was.
Well, there's like societal unwritten rules. And I would imagine when you see that, it's like everything's out the window. This is chaos.
That's exactly what I
right?
felt. Yes,
I was at a Pacquiao Marquez fight where Pacquiao got hit in the face by Marquez, and like we thought he expired. Like no one cheered because they were scared, and they on the Jumbotron and he was died. His wife screaming. We thought he was dead the way he hit the ground, and you know it was interesting because you know when you're at those fights and somebody really starts putting it on somebody else. The crowd stands up and starts screaming. There's a bloodlust in the air, and the energy rises, and you feel this primal.
Well, I took my daughter here.
I've been to one boxing match.
Because I wanted, I thought it was a father-daughter bonding thing. I like boxing.
Yeah.
And you went to one match. How did that turn out for you?
The guy died.
He died.
Stop it.
Right in front of us.
Right in front
of
us.
No.
Yeah.
What is your luck? I want to go to boxing matches with you.
Really? That's what you got from that?
Well, kind of. That's kind of. I mean,
no,
there's
I traumatized.
A bit of,
my wife was very upset with me. And you don't take the kids to a death match. You don't.
No.
I think it was me, my sister, and my cousin.
It was girls' night out.
Yeah, he took all the three girls.
I said it should be girls' night. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take the girls to. I want you to see what mano on mano is. And they saw. It was. They were. My sister-in-law got mad at me because your nieces were traumatized.
Yeah.
So I'm not allowed to take the kids out.
Those
anymore.
Are the stakes, you know. You realize that they're one-on-one combat sports. Those are the stakes, and you know it's who wasn't. I don't know if it was Mickey Rourke or somebody who said, you know, I wanted to be a boxer until I got in the ring with somebody who really, really wanted to be a boxer. Yes. You know, and you realize the difference that there's some of these guys that just have things inside of them that they're trying to get out, like Tyson. You know.
Oh, Tyson is kind of an interesting character. Yeah, the Paul brothers, you know, Logan and
yes, Jake, yes.
Yes. He seems to be doing okay.
Yeah, man. I mean, you know, it's one of those things where, like, I feel like an old guy, you know, where I'm like, the way it was and the heavyweight division and this and that. And then, you know, now it's, you know, it's just.
Well, that was the best at that time. That doesn't even exist anymore.
No. And that's the thing. I think you as the older I get, the more I start weighing my generation against other people's. I'm like, we had Michael Jordan. We had Mike Tyson. We had Bird Magic. Like, who you got?
Yeah.
You
know? Well, that's not music. This is music.
Right. Exactly. We had Michael Jackson. We had Madonna.
Yes.
Yeah,
and cool. So you were also, I told you, I think I talked to you on the phone one day, and you're a Penguins fan too.
Yes.
Brian Propp was a big fan of mine.
No kidding.
Do you know who Brian Propp?
Yeah. You're from Canada.
You're right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So he would go guffaw every time when he scored a goal, and that was from my first HBO special.
Putting that together right now. That's
amazing. So that was from me. It was from an HBO special. He would say guffaw. And he's written to me and a couple of times.
What's guffaw?
Nothing. It was just nothing. I just said, I can't remember what the context was, but it's from my act.
It's a catchphrase. Yeah.
Like, guffaw. Yeah, guffaw.
What was the catchphrase on like Full House? The little girls, they used to say something.
I don't remember.
Anyway, I don't remember either, but I remember there was one. Or, you know,
you remember the old Twins catchphrase?
It's your what you talk about, Willis.
Right.
Oh, I remember
guffaw.
That.
Guffaw. I said, you don't have to laugh. If everybody would just go guffaw if you enjoyed a joke, and I'd have the whole audience in that HBO special going guffaw. And that year, the Penguins were going for the Stanley Cup, and every time he scored a goal, he would go guffaw. And it was like an homage to me.
That's cool.
I know. I'm a cool guy.
Is that a Bob's Big Boy behind you? What is it?
That's Bobby's World.
Oh, I can see.
I did a cartoon in the 90s. You're too young.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was done. The 90s were my coming of age.
Those sure, were... I talk like that.
All right. Once again, I'm putting it all together.
That's a Saturday morning. It was the same voice I did. I did the movie Gremlins.
I remember Bobby's World.
Remember Gremlins?
Sure.
I'm Gizmo.
Tucker McGraw.
How did I not know this?
I'm trying to tell you.
She's Gizmo. I call her Mugwai.
Do you really?
The dog, yeah.
Tucker McGraw.
Mugwai.
Yeah, so that's me. Don't feed her after midnight.
Do not get the Mugwai with.
Oh, wow, that's pretty good.
Do not feed the Mugwai after midnight.
That's perfect. Do you do impressions?
A lot, yeah.
That's you do a lot?
I was in high school, my friends would make me do impersonations, and I would do like kind of like stand-up for my friends at parties in high school on Friday.
What voices do you do?
Oh, boy. Arnold, Pee-wee.
Let's hear.
Rodney. Who do you want?
Rodney.
Okay. I'll say... Hey, one time I took my wife to a dog show. She won. I get no respect.
That's good. Yeah. Pee-wee.
So funny, I forgot to laugh. chocolatey.
I can't do his voice, but I can go to a public movie and jerk off.
I mean, you are like on a roll with all of my friends. These are my friends. I was Pee-wee's best friend in a Pee-wee Herman movie.
Oh, you were in the movie?
Yeah, he was in the movie.
He was a friend. Yes.
I love Paul Rubens. Am I saying it bad? Am I saying
I
bad
love
things?
Paul Rubens. Paul is
I love him. I mean, but he did. Yeah. He, and I don't know that he should have been arrested
I don't
that.
Think so either. No. And that officer, you know, he was like, please don't do this to me. You know, I'll do children's shows in Florida. Like, I'll do all this charity work. Like, whatever you need. And the guy just, you know what I mean? He wanted to take him down.
Yeah. I hope I'm not being disrespectful to Paul and listen, I love Arnold. Arnold was my favorite governor.
I get it. No, I get it. It's fine. I mean, listen, I mean, if you know, you know, that happens, then
it does.
You're in the court of
night.
Public opinion, then this is what happens.
And sometimes it's late at night and you go downstairs and
you
slip.
Wasn't it a normal movie?
This is fantastic and this is crazy. And look at me, I'm the governor of California and here we are. I'm talking to Howie Mandel on this show. And
that's fantastic.
Yeah,
that is great.
Yeah, I spent a lot of time with Arnold.
You still?
I haven't seen him in a while because of COVID. But before that, we were best friends. We'd fly around on his, you know, fly around the country and go to do things. And he'd call me and say, you know, Joe Weider died, and his memorial is this Saturday, and you're going to give a speech on behalf of your own generation of bodybuilding. It's going to be fantastic, and see you on Saturday.
I love that.
Yeah, it was great. He was the best.
Are you doing the next Magic Mike movie?
No, I told him, you know, I wanted to retire. You know, it was like, I thought two of them was good, and because for me, I think it was like, you know, I come from classical theater. You know, I played.
That's not classical theater.
So I just think that there's a bit of like, no matter how good work you do, you're going to get marginalized in a large way, and people aren't going to see the work. They're going to, you know, they're going to talk about all that other flashy stuff that's going on screen. They're going to talk about,
well, you have the, you know, you have the standout scene of that. I think that whole series, the 7-Eleven.
Thanks.
The 7-Eleven.
No, I'm like super proud. I love that scene. And, you know, but it just seemed like, you know, people were using that, like, for example, so, you know, like the, that show, the Lakers show.
Right.
Right. So some of the guys who wrote that, they were interested in me playing Coach Pat Riley.
Right.
You know, I'm Pat's height, you know, we had, you know, kind of similar backgrounds, and through getting to know me, they were like, we think you've got, you know,
what it takes.
The inner life, you know, we think you get it. And I said, I agree. And I guess they ran it by, you know, the executive producer who had all the power. And he said,
well, don't tell me you lost that part.
He said, what, the guy with the fucking abs? And that was it. Like, what does it have to do with playing Pat Riley at all? You know, even this movie I did in New Jersey, it was real difficult to get me that part because, you know, there was someone who had never seen my work, who was involved, who had a big voice in the process, who just was hell-bent against me.
Because of that? Being
in this serious drama. Even though I played Richard III, I played Stanley Kowalski 3 times. You know, like, it doesn't matter to them. They have an image. Like I said, this is like a really reputable people who just wouldn't even watch my work. Didn't even care.
But you know, True Blood and...
Yeah, they don't see it that way. They're just like, oh, the naked guy on True Blood. It's like, no, that's an HBO series with a bunch of Oscar winners and Emmy winners.
Right.
And
so, but I'm saying you have a lot of... You're more than that scene.
I know, but they see the tabloids or they whatever it is. And for whatever reason, it was like, you know, I just kind of had to get off the train and say, listen, I need to dig myself out of this hole, and which was achievable. You know what I mean? Like, I was getting all those jobs that would make people forget all about that. They just kept getting canceled.
I'm sorry, I never fully.
I know, now we're going back to sadness. But you know, so it's been, you know, it's a fight. You know, it is a fight. You know, this business is a fight. They want to put you in
a box. And it's a constant fight. Listen, yeah. I didn't start. I did comedy, but then I was on a drama for years, and I couldn't get on another drama because of my comedic persona.
Right. You're the funny guy.
Right.
Yeah.
But right. I was on St. Elsewhere. I just came up with Denzel.
Yeah.
You know, but I couldn't. Nobody. But I get it. I get it that sometimes when people are watching it and you want the audience to lose themselves in it, you don't want to say that's the guy that puts the glove on his head.
No. And I think what the problem is, what they don't realize is, like, I remember being on True Blood and like Anna Paquin turned to me in the makeup trailer and was like, did you grow up on a farm? I was like, no.
Why?
But she thought because I was a big corn-fed werewolf from Jackson, Mississippi.
She thought, from True Blood?
Yeah. She thought that's who I was. And then during Magic Mike, I would do press and people would say things like, you know, did you ever like jump out of a cake in college, like to pay the bills? And I'm like, no, I went to like an Ivy League school. Like I'm not a male, I'm like classically trained.
But Channing is, right? Channing
was, yeah. Right. I mean, and no disrespect. I'm just saying that for me, it's kind of like, you know, I guess I'm doing such a good job that they're believing that that's who I am.
Right.
And that's all that I am.
Right.
But they're not open to, so, you know, thank God I have a great, great, great agent over at ICM, Carter Cohn, who like has scenes, and he will go to people's hotel rooms or their houses and he will sit down and watch the scene. Tell me he can't do it. And then they'll hire me. So like, I got to give it up for that
guy.
But
you're always working.
I have a good agent. Well, I have a good agent and I'm a hustler. I mean, a lot of the stuff that I've done over the past few years, I've self-generated or produced with my brother or hunted down the financing for to show people.
Or worked for it. I mean, the fact that they know, even if they got canceled, even if the prospect got canceled.
In an alternate universe, all those movies are happening.
No, but what I'm saying is they don't usually sit down with an actor and go, okay, this is canceled, but I love what you're doing. Let's make an origin story. Mm-hmm. Go ahead and write something. Like, even to have that opportunity, I feel like it's like this business is like gambling, you know? And they're letting you come to the table over and over and over again. And you're only going to keep getting better and better and more opportunities. Yeah. I just think the longer you do it, the better we get, right?
Yeah, I think so. But I also think, and I think that especially like, you know, as a guy, I think the more years, the more dirt you get on you, the more you got inside of you. I always looked up to those guys, like, you remember like the old Western saloon where like somebody's cheating at poker and the hand comes back on the gun and the other guy puts his hand on the gun and they look at each other and there's these extreme close-ups into their eyes.
Right.
And the one guy takes his hand off his gun because he knows the other guy's going to kill him. You can see it in his eyes. It's like, those were the guys I looked up to. So the older I get, the more stuff I go through. Like, I want that look in my eyes. You know, like, and so
there's
a silver lining. Well, thanks.
And you've had, even though you feel like, well, I don't know that you feel this way, but you've told us stories where you're concerned about being pigeonholed. I think you aren't.
No, I don't think
so
either.
You know, and you're very, well, you said that the, well, I, but, the, but I said Magic
no,
Mike.
For example, after Magic Mike, I said no to everything for a year and a half. And Paul Rubens called me and said, I have this script that I wrote for you. It's Pee-wee's comeback movie. And I want you to play his best friend. I was like, you gotta be kidding me. I go, yeah, I'm in. He goes, no, I want you to read the script. I go, okay. So I read the script and was like screaming my head off laughing, you know? And I told Paul, like, I'm in. Later that week, I'm talking to my agents and they kind of, you know, we're having a phone conference talking about stuff that's in town and what to send me out for. And they're like, oh, and there's this Pee Wee Herman script and we're just gonna say no to it and pass. I go, no. That's what I'm doing. And they're like, you've passed on everything for the past year and a half. You're going to say yes to the Pee-wee movie? I go, exactly. I go, that's my crybaby. You know, Johnny Depp got off of 21 Jump Street, did the John Waters movie. And right. I told Paul that. I said, this is my crybaby. I'm going to go do the Paul, you know, because like I said before, it's like, it's never been about money. It's never been about that kind of stuff. It's been about how to tell a great story, great cause, like Pee-wee Herman's comeback movie. Psh, I'm in. Like, are you kidding
me? He's brilliant.
Me?
He's actually brilliant.
He's one of the comic geniuses of all time.
He's a genius. Yeah. Not only comedy. He's a really smart man.
Yeah.
He is. Yeah, yeah. Have you ever considered, or maybe you have, and I'm not aware of, have you worked with your wife?
Yeah. In addition to, like, we do, like, kind of series of commercials sometimes. People will approach us, and we'll do commercials together, and we'll kind of play us, like, the sitcom version of us. And the other thing is that, so I produced the movie. It was like years trying to find the financing for this movie. It was about a guy who went to prison when he was a kid. He got drafted by the Yankees, but never got to play. He wound up hitting a kid in a fight, and the kid fell back, smacked his head, died, and the kid went and he went to prison.
That's a true story.
No, it feels like it is, but yeah. And then when I read the script, it kind of felt like it did. And so he winds up, like, you know, having to protect himself in prison, and he gets added time and doesn't wind up getting out until his late 30s. So he returns to his old neighborhood in the Bronx. In his late 30s, and he missed it all. He missed his life. Goes to a grocery store. Winds up seeing the girl whose heart he broke when they were 19 years old. And it's Sophia. So she and I play grown-up kids who were in love. Like, kind of meeting each other again after life.
Is it shot?
Yeah. It's called Bottom of the Ninth.
And when is that coming out?
It's out. Came out a few years ago.
I gotta watch it.
You should check it out.
I'm gonna definitely.
Some beautiful, like... I'm so proud of the stuff we did together. I think it's so beautiful.
Bottom of the Ninth.
Bottom of the Ninth.
Would it be on Netflix now or
It
Amazon?
Was on, geez, when it came out, it was, yeah, when it came out, it was, I think it was on Amazon.
So I'm gonna watch it tonight.
Yeah. It's a really nice
movie. Know that you have to run. There are people yelling and waving. I would love to stay, but you're going to Jimmy Kimmel, right?
Yeah, I'm doing Jimmy Kimmel.
Yeah, that's great.
Is this my publicist's website's? All right, so
you're doing.
Well, I mean, I got a couple minutes. I mean, what are we doing here? I mean, do I have to go?
All right. Well, they're just. I just don't want to hold you.
We were told that you do.
We were told.
My driver is super fast.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could tell. You were here a half hour late.
Well, that was because the dog was sick, and I was an hour and a half late getting out of the hospital with the dog.
Oh,
that dog?
What's wrong with the dog?
What's wrong with your dog?
She got sick yesterday.
What's wrong?
She, you know, sometimes these dogs, they just. You know, get an upset stomach or get something in their intestine, and so she was in a bad place yesterday. So I took her in this morning with ample time, and unfortunately, I'm here.
And you showed up even from the hospital. You came here.
Yeah, and we made great time. Like we made it here. Like we flew. So I mean, that's.
Is she gonna be okay?
Yeah,
she's pulling through.
She's okay.
She's not. She looks like tired. She tired?
She's pretty chill.
Is she old?
I bring her to set.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
They let you take that to Europe.
Take that. Well, you can tell he's not a dog person.
No, I'm not.
They let you take that thing to Europe?
I wasn't either until I got this.
Really?
I never had a pet, and I wasn't interested.
Did you buy that, or did Sophia buy
Sophia wanted. Sophia had the shelter bring her over, but these dogs, they're notorious for picking one person, and so she picked me. And she needed two surgeries, and nobody was going to pay for it, so they were going to put her down. I mean, there was no question. And so I just took her, and the next day I took her to the hospital and was like... you know, get rid of everything. I don't want to wait. I don't want to wait for a biopsy. I don't want to wait for this to clear up. Just get, you know, fix it. Fix it now. And
so she's empty inside.
And so she has some stuff. You know, they had to. You know, there was like a cyst that was cancer. So I just said I cut it all out. She had what turned out to be 11 bladder stones. It was making her pee blood. It was so horrible to watch. And now she's okay. You know, she's all right. She's fine. She'll be fine.
She went to the hospital today.
Yeah, she'll be fine.
Well, that's wonderful.
Yeah, so she's like,
I don't know.
So she's a rescue.
She's a rescue, yeah. So I recommend it. I mean, if you're going to get a dog, get a rescue. And the dogs know that you rescued them. So, you know,
How do you know that dog knows?
She knows. Like, she knows.
Look at her. At her. That's her person.
Yeah, I'm the dada.
No, I know. I've never seen I follow you on Instagram. Yeah. And I've never seen a picture without the, no matter where it is.
Well.
And but you're carrying it. And
yeah,
I've never
seen.
Take
her everywhere. She likes to go with me. I'll just take her everywhere. She's fine. She's like less than five.
So we have dogs. I have dogs. My wife has dogs.
But I have dogs.
And you have dogs. But my wife was the chosen one with the dog. And the dog, also a Chihuahua, hated me.
Right. That happens.
Yeah. So hated me.
I know.
And would bite me. And I'm not allowed in the same room. The dog's okay when my wife's not around.
Yeah.
But then if my wife walks in the room, then I get attacked.
Yeah. I had ex-girlfriends that had dogs like that. So when Sophia brought it up, I was like, I really don't want a dog. But come to find out, the dog just loved me. And that's it. So we're just like a package deal now.
So on Jimmy Kimmel, what are you promoting?
I'm promoting Moonhaven, which is my AMC show that comes out in July, which is what I shot in Ireland for 4 months last year. And it's
Sophia was very sad
that I was gone.
That you were gone. That was right when we were working, and that's a long time. So like for marriage.
Yeah.
I don't think I've been away from my wife for 4 months.
I was gonna ask, do you plan on stopping at all anytime soon and like just staying home with the family?
I would never plan on doing that. I'm a worker. I have to work. My whole being is surrounded by work. If I could find something to do, work at home that was fulfilling, that where I could, you know, whatever, pay my bills and be happy, you know, I would absolutely look into that. But, you know,
is that tough though? You're both
it's
very
really hard.
busy
That's
people.
The hardest part. It's the hardest part is, you know, because the girlfriends I have for her were, you know, they didn't have the inner security, I think, to deal with what was happening to me as my career kept growing.
Right.
There was just a
deep, you don't still deep, have those girlfriends, do you? I just
well played. You know, so it was one of those things where you know, I didn't want to date somebody in the industry. You know, I really wanted somebody out. I thought that was what I wanted, or somebody who was going to be complimentary to my lifestyle. We were going to travel, have kids, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like that whole thing, and be a family unit that would move around. But I just couldn't find somebody who really understood that side of me or supported that side of me. And until I met Sophia, and we just had so much fun. We laughed our asses off we would just laugh so hard all the time, and she got it. And I did know that the difficulty would come when I had to travel.
So does it make it easier though, because you're both in the same career, so you understand that the other person, what they have to do.
It does, but that doesn't take away the fact that you're gone.
For four months.
And you start turning back into a single person to a certain degree. I mean, not single, like dating-wise, but I mean, like, you start getting back into your old habits. You're just kind of like this guy who lives with this dog in this apartment in Ireland. Mm-hmm. And now she's coming to visit. And things, you know, coffee cups are in the wrong place. You know what I mean? Like, you have to remember how to be in a relationship again.
Right.
Know?
So, but you guys were separated for a long time, and she was miserable because of it.
Well,
she was.
I mean, I'm sad to hear that, but also happy to hear that.
I love that.
Yeah.
I would love a chance to work with you one day. You're a really good actor. You're a funny guy. You have a full range.
The first step is you go play Dungeons and Dragons.
I'd like
then.
To watch it at least.
You can't watch. You have to play.
I'll be the old Jew. Yeah, but I don't know how to, like, how do you, like, what am I striving for? What am I trying, like, I
well,
get
here's
poker,
the thing. If
I'm
you're,
winning.
Well, so what I'm getting from you is that there's kind of a religious aspect or some sort of, like, theological, like, no. You have this power coming from, well, you're a Jew. You believe in some higher power, whatever that
okay.
is. Okay. So we could come up with that. Now you derive your power from that. So then
that would be my agent.
Your lot in life is to make that thing proud or carry out whatever that thing inspires you to do. Now we're creating a character. Now we're creating storylines. And as you do that, you wind up finding your place within this group. Now you all have a common goal. Now you all are moving together towards the end game.
I still don't understand. I'm sure there's a lot of people that are watching.
It's just acting.
Just five, 10 guys sitting around a table going, and I'm going, I'm the Jew. Let's move together toward the power.
Are you eating those chips? Do you serve chips?
Yeah. I get a food truck usually in the driveway.
A food truck?
Yeah, man.
What do you serve for Dungeons & Dragons groups?
We get a big food truck. I'll get whatever the hot food truck is. You know, we get like, you know, sushi rolls, or we'll get like, what's the big, it's like the pinup burgers. I forget what it's called. I'd have to go.
You guys know what he's talking about? The pinup burgers?
Anyway, they look like my
Betty's burgers.
They look like my publicist is screaming at them.
Okay, they got to go. You got to go.
But it was, yeah, I wish we could talk more, man.
We will. You know what? I've told Sophia a couple times, when you guys aren't busy, I would love to go out to dinner with you. And
I would love that. You mentioned that to me when I came over to set. Yeah, yes. I'd love that.
I'd love that. Yeah. I've called her a couple times, and then I didn't follow through.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, because she said, okay. I said, you want to go to dinner?
You can call me. I'll make sure.
Give me your number before I leave.
Yeah.
Anyway, have a great shot on Jimmy.
Thank you.
Everybody, watch your shows. Read your books. Is your book still out?
My book, Evolution, yeah.
Is still out. Read the books. Whatever Joe is in.
Thanks.
Do it. And good luck to the dog. I hope the dog feels better.
Yeah, she'll be okay. You'll be okay, right?
Oh.
She's so cute.
He's okay.
All right. Let's take a picture together.
Yeah.
Okay.